This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty, hit us up on the Dr. Pepper Twitter line at Mike Golic Jr., at Chris Canty 99. And Mike, we got a situation brewing in Wisconsin, and I'm not talking about with the Green Bay Packers over the Milwaukee Brewers. There's something going on with the Milwaukee Bucks, Big Buck, in Giannis Antetokounmpo. In the latest interview that he did with GQ, he had some things to say that I'm sure some Bucks fans are going to be a little bit concerned with. Here's Giannis in GQ on what his future might entail with Milwaukee. He says, I just love challenges. What's the next challenge? The next challenge might not be here. Me and my family choose to stay in this city that we love, that we all love, and is taking care of us for now. In 2 years, that might change. I'm being totally honest with you. And to be totally honest, it doesn't sound like Giannis is fully committed to being a Buck for life. And you wouldn't think that he would have that type of perspective coming off of a championship season.
No, but Chris, I don't know. To me, this makes a lot of sense. Right now, this doesn't have to do. I think the Bucks right now are something like 11th in the East. It's been a bit of a struggle. There have been some injuries to this team to start the season. But looking at this, do I believe that Giannis like wants to leave? No, he just signed that long-term deal before last season. He erased the biggest storyline humanly possible. So I don't think he's eager to necessarily jump ship now, truly. But, Chris, I think he's been around the league long enough to know that you got to keep pressure on these teams to keep being aggressive and to keep adding and to keep trying to find what's next, right? Like, that is straight out of the LeBron James tool for team building on how to make sure your organization continues to do right by you.
No, I can understand that, and I get exactly where he's coming from. You want to make sure you maintain a really good supporting cast because, as we've seen from the more prominent players in the NBA, it's not about being able to put up stats. It's not about being all NBA, getting all of these votes and all of these MVP awards. It's about ultimately being able to win championships. That's how you enhance your legacy. That's what Kevin Durant is chasing after. That's what LeBron James is chasing after. And Giannis views himself in that vein in terms of being one of the best basketball players on the planet. And after the run that he had in the playoffs, it would be hard to argue with him on that fact. But I guess he's looking at it from the standpoint of make sure that the organization keeps the pieces around me that I need in order to have success at the highest level. You saw them go out last year and make moves. They brought in Drew Holiday and they got rid of Eric Bledsoe, and it seems like that paid dividends for them. And so it's just a matter of the team continuing to tweak, continuing to add in order to put them in better shape to have a chance to repeat, to be able to have success at the highest level. So I understand the strategy from Giannis, but it's got to be a little unnerving when the front office hears that and when the fan base hears that, because this is your best player talking about a city that has shown him a lot of love but has also acknowledged, this might not necessarily represent the challenge that I want for the future in my career. I think that's something that can be real, and that's something that's a little bit different than just the normal run-of-the-mill player applying pressure to the organization.
Kenny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. And, Chris, I think a part of this is also just Giannis as a person, right? Is this sounds jarring because Giannis, the person, by and large, seems to be someone that is not as interested with the normal trappings of NBA stardom, right? He doesn't seem to be that guy. Even looking at the headline on this article by Zach Barron, again in GQ, the source of all this, his fairy tale rise made him a sensation, but now, after turning the once dismal Bucks into champions, he's becoming something more like a legend. Inside the whirlwind next chapter of the NBA's most dazzling global star, who's deciding what he intends to conquer next. Like, Chris, looking at all this, it's been about the purity of Giannis, right? It was him celebrating with 50 nuggets after the championship game, FaceTiming with his brother. Like, part of me also thinks he is just conditioned to answer these questions honestly, that he is also someone who is not going to hold back, that is going to not really get caught up in the image game as much. And so him being honest about this situation while also understanding the weight his voice carries, both of those things feel like they can be true at once with him.
No, I'm with you on that one, but there is such a thing as keeping it too real, right? And this is one of those where it feels like Giannis let people behind the curtain a little too much, right? By being able to open up in this way and saying that there is the possibility that I might not finish my career with the Milwaukee Bucks. You just wouldn't expect to hear that at the beginning of a season coming off of a title run, it just seems like it can do nothing but distract or deter from their goals this year as a team. And so I don't understand the timing of it. It doesn't necessarily make sense, except for, you know, the prospects of being able to keep pressure on the organization. But then I always go back to, you know, athletes finding different ways to motivate themselves and the challenge being a big part of that. And if this guy is saying that he's looking forward to new challenges and new opportunities throughout his career, and it might not necessarily be in Milwaukee, a part of me says you have to take that at face value because, you know, he accomplished the goal of being able to win a championship in Milwaukee. Yep. He doesn't have anything to prove as far as that's concerned. So I guess when it comes to what's next for him, there could be the possibility that there might be a destination that can offer him more in the way of, you know, winning a championship and being able to, you know, enhance his legacy with a franchise that doesn't necessarily, you know, have a lot of history, a lot of success in their track record. So I'm just looking at it from where Giannis is saying he's talking about the idea of a new challenge, and that might not necessarily be in Milwaukee. I think there is a possibility that some of that could be true.
Yeah, I think we underrate, one, how long he's already been in Milwaukee and this being a true climb to get to this point with two MVPs along the way. Like, the championship was the culmination of a lot of accomplishment before that for Giannis. But, Chris, the other side of this that's interesting is what the reaction locally is going to be, because I always wonder, how upset can the fan base be hearing this? Because to your point about the timeline, I'm sure he did a lot of this interview during the offseason. I'm sure this was stuff that, fresh off the NBA Finals and fresh off being the Finals MVP, you do this interview in the offseason. There's all these things that go into doing a profile like this for someone writing it. And so now it comes out during the season, and it might be uncomfortable or so for a day, but you think fans are going to feel some type of way about this? I mean, the guy did just get you everything you always wanted.
No, I think fans can still feel a way about it, because even though he did win a championship, he also did sign a Supermax contract and lock in long-term with this franchise. So the fact that you would do that and then have this level of success and be talking about leaving, that's jarring to the fan base. So, yeah, I think a lot of fans of the Milwaukee Bucks would be upset that these comments are coming out right now, because they just reached the highest of highs, and Giannis leaving the franchise would represent the lowest of lows. So, yeah, I don't understand why he would entertain the possibility of, you know, potentially leaving a couple of years down the road, especially with the team just coming off of a championship run. That's the part that doesn't make a lot of sense from the fans' perspective. But from the players' perspective, I get it, man. Like, sometimes your time at a certain organization may run its course. You feel like you've done all you can do, and you're looking for the next opportunity, and that opportunity representing yet another chance for you to enhance your legacy. Like, I don't know that there's really any more Giannis can do to enhance his legacy with the Milwaukee Bucks. Sure, he could go on some kind of dynastic run, but when we talk about, you know, those players, when they have that kind of superstar status, when they have multiple MVPs, they usually go to big markets. They usually go to iconic franchises in order to further build and enhance their legacy. And I'm not necessarily sure Milwaukee fits the mold for that. So maybe that could be something that's important to Giannis. Going to a franchise, I don't know, like the Los Angeles Lakers after LeBron James steps away from the game, or going to a franchise like the New York Knicks that's been desperate for a megastar. Like, those could be opportunities that are afforded to him on the horizon, and it could be a situation that's too good for Giannis to walk away from. So I'm not saying that that's what's on his mind, but those could be some potential possibilities down the road. And when Giannis is saying he's looking for the next challenge, I can't necessarily rule that out.
Yeah, this isn't something that we're saying is definitively going to happen. It's just, considering the source and the time, a little surprising when all of a sudden we've got quotes pop up where Giannis even hints at the possibility that there could be a life outside of Milwaukee for him in the not-so-distant future. So we've got that going on in the NBA right now. Boy, is this quality pre-December 25th NBA content if I have ever seen it. So shout out to Zach Barron over at GQ for getting that damn thing done. But coming up next, speaking of regular season content here, coming up tonight we have got, at 7 o'clock Eastern, the next round of college football playoff rankings getting ready to come out. We will discuss who might be in the current top four after some more moving and shaking this past week, and the possibility that someone may be lurking in the distance. That's next here, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
The This is ESPN Radio.
Yeah, that sound is courtesy of ESPN Radio. That's Jack Cohn's 15-yard touchdown to Kevin Austin Jr. in Notre Dame's 28-3 victory over my Virginia Cavaliers. And this celebratory moment of the week is brought to you by Allstate. Save money like a champion with Allstate. Championship savings for the win. This is Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty, and Gojo. It is Tuesday, so that means we're in line for the third installment of the college football playoff rankings. And the question that I have to you is, after week 11 and what we saw, what happened with Oklahoma, is that path getting a little bit clearer for Cincinnati to get into that college football playoff top four?
Man, it's lining up rather nicely for the Bearcats, right? Like, I have screamed this until I'm blue in the face, but all I said was they just got to keep winning in this year where not only has it already been a chaos ball of a season, but we knew coming up down the stretch here, Oklahoma was going to have to face Baylor and Iowa State and Oklahoma State. Like, we are not out of the realm of possibility of Oklahoma losing a second game over the course of this season. So you had that going on. We've got what's happening in the NFC West. God, the SEC West. It feels like an NFL division sometimes.
No, but it is. It's NFL adjacent.
It is NFL adjacent, but you've got Alabama with still a difficult path forward despite a dominant win against New Mexico State, who might be one of the worst teams in college football. And so, Chris, with all of that lined up ahead of them, with Oregon still having to go, I believe, on the road to Corvallis to play in that Oregon State game, to play Utah this season, like, all of this is lined up very well for a Cincinnati team that, you know, whatever version of style points you want, like, they beat USF by enough for us to not really be concerned about it. If you watch the game, a lot of the same stuff still pops up, but that's not what matters right now, Chris. As long as Cincinnati keeps winning and as long as Notre Dame keeps winning to bolster their best win right now, they're going to be in a pretty good spot, and they got to feel great about that.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of carnage that happens around them because you didn't even mention what's going to happen in the Big Ten with Ohio State having dates back-to-back with Michigan State and Michigan. You got to figure that that's going to be an interesting 2 weeks in terms of determining who's going to play for that Big Ten championship. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, Oregon is not above being beat by Oregon State. I mean, when it comes to the loss that they had earlier in the season to Stanford, a team that's terrible that they had no business losing to. So, yeah, I think there's going to be opportunities for them. The most intriguing part to me is what happens in the SEC with Alabama and potentially, you know, the SEC championship game and how the committee would judge a two-loss Alabama team if their losses happen to be Texas A&M, obviously, on the road, and then to Georgia in the SEC championship game. What does that look like in terms of how far the committee drops them down? Because I'm still of the belief that Alabama, even if they lose to Georgia in the SEC title game, they still get into college football playoffs. Like, I just feel like that's the ultimate lifetime achievement award for Nick Saban. Like, they will go ahead and assign them that level of success and give them an opportunity to compete for a natty, even though you might have an undefeated Cincinnati team that could potentially be on the outside looking in as a result of making that decision.
But, man, Chris, I'm not one for, like, the system is totally broken. Like, there's problems. There's been problems with every system of determining a national champion in college football, right? Like, going all the way back to when it just used to be the people that would vote on this, the various polls deciding who would be the national champion. Then we had the BCS, then this. Like, no system's ever going to be great. We're all predisposed to kind of hate whatever's going on. There's legitimate problems with this. If a two-loss non-conference champion Alabama gets into the playoff, I'll put my hand up and say we probably got some problems because it's not even like they have been the most dominant Bama we've seen. Like, Chris, I agree with you. Like, the Lifetime Achievement Award thing, we're human beings. It factors into it. And so Alabama and the afterglow from that buzzsaw that was the 2020 championship team can understand it being around in some ways just because we're human. But it's also got to be the comparison that kind of is the thief of their joy here, right? Because the Alabama team that rushed for 6 yards against LSU 2 weeks ago, they didn't live here in 2020. And so that comparison at some point's got to be unfavorable to them because in big time games, and we'll see what the Iron Bowl looks like, everyone's going to start slipping on Auburn because they lost to Mississippi State this last weekend. But that is not going to be a walk in the park for that Alabama team.
And that's in Jordan-Hare Stadium, too.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's not an easy place to play.
No. So we've got all of that going on here, Chris. So I don't think a two-loss Alabama team gets in. I think I have to believe at this point that what we've seen, like there have been in the 7 years that we've been doing this now for the CFP, a few non-negotiable rules, and one of those is you can't lose two games. That's just never been something that the committee has deemed acceptable. I get we could have the meteor theory this year, but we've got enough teams that have been hanging on around here. I mean, listen, Chris, like you said, the Big Ten East is the most important division down the stretch of all of this, by far. Mm-hmm. And I think more and more people are going to start to gain a little momentum and say, man, the game could look interesting this year as Michigan continues to survive, continues to do enough on offense to balance a defense led by Aiden Hutchinson, who looks like it is up to par for this season.
Yeah, Aiden Hutchinson is a Sunday dude, by the way. We keep talking about it like there are certain guys you see playing on Saturday that you know are going to play in the NFL. He is definitely one of those dudes. He looks the part. He looks like one of those Bosa brothers, tell you the truth. But, Michigan, Michigan State, and Ohio State, like, it's all going to be interesting to see that play out. And you got to think that one of those teams are going to find their way into the college football playoff before it's all said and done. But, I mean, I think it's also interesting when the committee is charged with coming up with the four best teams to compete for a national championship, making the case that Cincinnati would belong in the college football playoff over a two-loss Alabama team if one of those losses happens to be in the SEC championship against what everybody would say is the best team in all of college football in the Georgia Bulldogs. I just think it's interesting. I get it. There are certain unwritten rules, and one of them is you can't be a two-loss non-conference champ and two-loss team and not a conference champion and get in. But at the same time, you have a hard time making the case head-to-head that Cincinnati's better than Alabama. I just don't know how you could do that if you were one of those committee members, which means that they're going to be in an unenviable position. But to your point, when you start talking about the system as a whole and only having four slots for the college football playoff, you know that there's going to be somebody that's deserving to have an opportunity that ultimately gets left out.
Yep, it is going to be very interesting to that end how the committee, the very human committee, we will find out tonight just how human they are. Because remember, they ranked Michigan above Michigan State last week despite the head-to-head win for Michigan State. And Ohio State gave you ample reason, again, by going out and toe-tagging that team for Purdue that just upset Michigan State. Enough reason to say, all right, we heard your complaints. We probably feel a bit of that pressure. Maybe they flip out Oregon and Ohio State this week. Going to be something to keep an eye on. We will have the Notre Dame conversation with Jason Fitz later on when he joins the show because that's going to be a factor. But coming up next, let's head to the NBA right now because the Golden State Warriors have the best record in the NBA, and we still haven't got one of their best players back. How high can this thing climb? We'll get to that after this word from Indeed. Now, we get it. It's your business, and you want to be involved in all the decisions, especially who to hire. Then you need Indeed. It's the all-in-one hiring platform that makes it easy to attract, screen, and interview candidates all in one place. With smart tools like Instant Match, you instantly get a list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your job description the minute you sponsor a job. So spend less time sifting through resumes and more time saying you're hired. Visit Indeed.com/credit. Back with Nick Friedell next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty, all guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. And Mike, that's where we're going to go right now to bring on ESPN NBA reporter Nick Friedell. And Nick, I got to talk big bucks with you. I'm talking Giannis Antetokounmpo, who made some waves with some headlines in a GQ article that dropped today, hinting that his future might not necessarily be in Milwaukee. Can you tell us more about it and give some context to why Giannis made that statement after his championship run last season with the Bucks?
Well, I read it like everybody else did, guys. And my feeling is, having talked to Giannis about this over the years, the only place he has ever wanted to be is Milwaukee. The only place he wanted to see his jersey retired is Milwaukee. Now, does that mean that he can change his mind down the line? Sure. He's a human just like everybody else. But something that always resonated with him in years past and even in the last couple seasons was being like a Kobe, like a Dirk, like a Reggie Miller, somebody who had been in one place and been the guy in one city his entire career. So Maybe things have changed a little bit for him after winning that title, but I've always taken him at his word, and I've always believed him to be very honest in how he was feeling. So I know that that quote specifically caused some waves all over the place today, but I have always believed that when push came to shove, he always wanted to stay in one place because of how much that meant to him. So count me in the group, at least even after reading that, that believes that when the time comes, he's going to end up staying there compared to trying to find somewhere else to be.
Nick, did you ever take him for the kind of guy that may float something like this to keep pressure on an organization to continue to be aggressive in moves? Like, we know that is one of the modern superstar tactics.
Yeah, Mike, I didn't. So maybe the thing really have changed in time with Giannis after getting that ring. And, hey, more power to him if they have. But anybody who has been around him for any length of time can tell you that this is just a real down-to-earth dude. He always tries to make everybody around him feel comfortable, and he's just trying to win. So I know when you get to that different level of superstar power and that stratosphere that things can change. And maybe this is the first glimpse of a new perspective and a new mindset for Giannis. But my feeling, again, having been around him through the years, is this is a guy who has always been loyal to Milwaukee and always been loyal to that organization. So maybe he wants different moves to be made, and maybe different conversations are happening behind the scenes. But I would just be really, really surprised if any different type of option appeared, whether it was New York or L.A., because that's always where the conversation seems to start. And Giannis landed somewhere there, at least in the next few seasons. I think his heart is still in Milwaukee, and I'd be surprised if that changed.
Nick, I'm a Lakers fan, so I got to ask you about what happened last night. They got dominated by the Chicago Bulls, and a couple of the Bulls newcomers, Lonzo Ball and DeMar DeRozan, shined in that performance. I think DeRozan dropped something like 38 points, and he let it be known after the game that he felt the kind of way about the Lakers not sealing the deal when it came to acquiring them this offseason. But I got to ask, in the performance last night, in the game last night, does it say more about the Chicago Bulls and where they're at, or more about the Los Angeles Lakers and how much they need LeBron James?
Chris, I would say it's more about the Bulls, because we know the Lakers are a mess. Anybody who's watched the Lakers and is a Laker fan, you know. Mm-hmm. They're all over the place right now. It's a pretty big disaster. And LeBron's going to fix a lot because LeBron is still that awesome. But to think that LeBron's going to come back and all of a sudden – everything that ails the Lakers is going to get fixed, that is a tall task. This is a team that has shown flaws from the very beginning. And I can say, as somebody who doubted how good the Bulls could be this season, I thought they were probably a fringe playoff team to start. Maybe at the high ceiling, they would be like a 5 or 6 seed. But what they're showing us, at least early, is they want to push to get a home court advantage in that first round. And to be where the Bulls have been the last few seasons and to get to that point, that would be a huge upgrade. So you get the type of performance from Lonzo, and you see what DeRozan is doing early in his time. And they haven't had Vucevic the last few games because of the COVID protocols, but he'll come back. And Zach LaVine, we know he can score. So what it shows to me is that this Bulls team has really exceeded a lot of expectations early, and they're getting better along the way.
Speaking of exceeding expectations, as we're talking to ESPN NBA reporter Nick Friedell on the Goodyear Hotline, we got a big one tonight between the Warriors and the Brooklyn Nets. Did we somehow underestimate the Golden State Warriors before they got Klay Thompson back?
Yes, and I was right there with you, because I'm looking at this team and I'm going, well, we saw what Steph can do even as a borderline MVP last year. But you weren't sure that Draymond still had it on a nightly basis, and you didn't think that the depth would be there. And, Mike, I can tell you, having watched this team now the last few years, the difference is in Draymond. We know what Steph's going to give this club every night. Draymond, after that gold medal performance with Team USA in Tokyo, has been the engine for the group, especially defensively. But when you add what Steph is doing to what we know Draymond can do, and then you add the experience of guys like Otto Porter, Andre Iguodala, Bielitsa has had a couple nice games so far for them. Gary Payton II has been a nice surprise off the bench. They have depth now that they didn't have last year, and they have depth that they believe in. And when you have that to go with two stars of Steph and Draymond's caliber, and then you add Clay, and then potentially Wiseman gives you something down the line, that is a force to be reckoned with. And I know the schedule hasn't been real tough early, but this is a very good team that's going to get better in the next few months.
Yeah, it's going to be an exciting test, and for a lot of people, maybe their idea of a finals preview at this point as Golden State heads to take on Brooklyn tonight. Excited to check that one out. Always excited to talk to Nick Friedell. Nick, we appreciate the time, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Always, buddy. Talk to you guys later.
Awesome stuff again. ESPN NBA reporter at Nick Friedell on Twitter is where you can find him. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. With insurance for cars, homes, boats, motorcycles, RVs, and commercial vehicles at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. Coming up next, we talked about those NFL power rankings here. And we have talked all year about how we have tried to figure out who the hell is even good in the AFC. Do we finally have a definitive answer? We'll tell you next here. Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty. Join the conversation on the Dr. Pepper line, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. That's the remix, and I remix Mike Golic Jr.'s name. But
do you have a Mike Canty in your family, by the way? Because it sounds pretty natural.
There is a Mike Canty in my family, actually. I got a second cousin named Mike Canty on my father's side. So, yes, there is a Mike Canty, so shout out to him.
I have a Chris Golic in my family. If you wanted to complete that remix, my mom's name is Christine. She goes by Chris Golic. So we've got a Mike Canty and a Chris Golic out there.
There you go. We're just bringing it all together. But we're trying to also bring together the focus of the AFC playoff picture, and that's been easier said than done, Gojo. And right now, I mean, trying to figure out what the best team in the conference is, I mean, it makes you go crazy just because one week you feel like you got a beat on it, and then a team gets upset, and then you don't know which direction to turn. I was ready to crown my Baltimore Ravens as the best team in the conference right up until they caught the fade down in Miami on Thursday Night Football against the hapless Dolphins. So now, just looking at the last couple of weeks and how everything has played out, you have to look at the Tennessee Titans, who have the best record in the AFC, and say there's a case to be made that they're the best team in the conference. I don't know who else you would really point to and say that they're better than them definitively right now. So for right now, they've got to wear the crown, even though they don't have their best player.
Yeah, I looked down and realized that quietly the Titans have won 6 in a row. And that includes wins over the Bills, a Chiefs squad that looks more like itself at this point in time. That Rams team that we just saw get busted the other night on Monday Night Football. The Colts and this last weekend, the Saints. Like, Chris, not all of those are banner wins. We know this has been a season with a lot of ebbs and flows with the top teams, but those are some of the best wins of any team you're probably going to find. And so I'm willing to kind of look past a weird, inexplicable loss to the Jets because I feel like everyone's got those. And in this year especially, where we've seen people with the ability to be physically brutal near the line of scrimmage have had a decided advantage. And that Titans defense, hand to God, was not one I saw coming to the party the way it has so far this year.
No question about it, but that involves Jeffrey Simmons playing at an all-pro level and getting the best version of Harold Landry as well. I don't think people are giving him enough credit for what he's doing. DeNico Autry also coming to the party. That's the one thing we've been able to say about that Titans defense. Like, they've been able to get after opposing quarterbacks with just a 4-man rush. And they did the same thing with Trevor Siemian this past week. 4 sacks. I want to say they had 7 quarterback hits and 9 total pressures. So that group being able to put pressure on opposing quarterbacks is something that plays well, especially when you start talking about postseason-style football. And the Tennessee Titans resume speaks for itself. You talked about it. They've rattled off 6 straight since that overtime loss to the Jets, and 5 straight against teams that were in the playoffs a year ago. So there has to be something to be said for this group being able to compete at that level against that caliber of competition. So I do trust the Tennessee Titans. I trust their coach that they're not going to come out flat and have, you know, those lackluster performances that we've seen from other teams that are at the top of the conference. But at the same time, I am concerned about the Tennessee Titans' formula for victory on the offensive side of the ball, just because they have struggled to run the football in the absence of Derrick Henry. Like, it just did not look good the other day against the New Orleans Saints. They had 28 rush attempts for less than 70 yards. Like, at some point, something about that has to change, and I'm not sure that Deonta Foreman or Adrian Peterson are going to add much punch to that running game. I don't know where the production comes from to provide balance on that side of the ball, and then losing Julio Jones, having him out for the next several weeks on IR, that doesn't help things. So I know by record they're the best team in the AFC, but I don't necessarily know that that's how the season's going to ultimately end. Now, the one thing that they do have going in their favor, they got the easiest strength of schedule in the NFL the rest of the way. Like, there are a lot of gimmies in there. I think they got two against Houston, they got a game against Jacksonville, and they got one against Miami. Although we saw Miami's not a gimme when it came to the Baltimore Ravens. But you get what I'm saying. Like, it feels like they have an easier path than some of the other AFC contenders, and you're hoping that they can figure out that run game thing along the way.
Chris, just looking at the way the top of this AFC picture is right now, I don't think it's going to happen, but Kansas City plays the Dallas Cowboys this weekend. If that's a win, or even a game that's close, we're going to crack open the door for Kansas City fully and truly, right?
Mm.
Like this Baltimore team down the stretch.
You can't quit that narcotic. You can't give it up.
You brought me back yesterday, Chris.
You did
this to me yesterday.
You like Pookie from New Jack City. You just can't leave it alone. It keep calling you. Let it go.
Chris, were you not a little bit encouraged by what we saw against the Las Vegas Raiders this weekend?
Well, how could you not be? I mean, Pat Mahomes threw 5 touchdowns and no interceptions and over 400 yards. I mean,
so we couple that with the fact that Baltimore has been pretty banged up here. I saw, by the way, they just released Le'Veon Bell recently, that failed experiment here. So we've got that going on. The Bills, no offense, Christine Lisi, our SportsCenter update anchor, please cover your ears. The Bills lost to the Jags the other weekend. What in the hell was that game that went on here? And like you mentioned, Tennessee's got a lot of injury things working against it here. I'm just saying, based on continuity alone, Kansas City finds themselves in a pretty decent place. And if Patrick Mahomes has all of a sudden developed restraint when it comes to trying to go after big plays that aren't there, this could be kind of scary for a lot of people. That's all I'm saying.
I don't think it's kind of. I think it is. Literally, Kansas City became the scariest team in the AFC overnight. That happened. They went from worst in the division to first in the division with just one win. So the fact that they've been able to stack wins in back-to-back-to-back weeks, like, you feel like everything is trending in the right direction, and seeing Pat Mahomes and that offense be a little more patient and take some of the underneath throws and wait for the defense to come up before they try to hit him over the top. I think that's the kind of maturity that we've been waiting for from that offense, because we know that Andy Reid, that group, they're impatient. They want to be a big play, explosive play outfit, but sometimes when teams take that away with shell coverages, you're going to have to find ways to move the football and sustain drives, and that involves the run game, but that also involves taking some of the checkdowns, some of the underneath throws. And I thought Andy Reid did a good job of building in more screen game to help Pat Mahomes along with that early on in that Vegas game. If they can continue to do that game plan-wise, I think the Chiefs are going to be in a good spot as they get ready for the stretch run.
They got to prove they can do it twice, and they're going to do it against an offense on the other side that's going to stress the pipes a lot more than the Raiders did. But as we look around at that weird logjam in the middle of the AFC, a challenger has started to emerge. Coming up next, though, we will see if any of that performance good enough to make Chris Canty's NFL Top 5 next on ESPN Radio.